Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for the 30th of March. We're going to be coming up on our one-year anniversary during the month of April. Welcome, Tim. Welcome, Catherine.
Hello.
Good evening.
Yeah. Good to have you all on again tonight. As some people read the blogs have seen, our guest is going to be Andy Brack of the State House Report in South Carolina, one of the leading South Carolina political reporters. He also has a think tank for Southern politics over there as well. He ran for Congress a few cycles ago, so he's pretty versed in Carolina politics. So that should be good. But in the meantime, a lot of news going on. Different candidates are starting to kind of come forward as we're within a month of disclosure time or candidate filing. And one candidate has decided not to run. I don't know if y'all saw the report, but Jack Ellis, who around the, about 4 months ago, decided he was going to run for Congress against Jim Marshall, ran a very quiet campaign, to say the least, just decided not to run for Congress. Catherine, any thoughts on that?
I just heard about it just this second, so I'm surprised.
Yes, I think Andre's blog broke that story, Georgia Unfiltered, and it was just such a quiet campaign. This is a guy that was managed to be elected mayor of Macon two terms, and you would think he would have had some impact in the primary, and then just decided not to run. Tim, your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm sure one person that's very happy about it is Congressman Marshall tonight. Actually, Mayor Ellis could have run in either of two congressional seats, if I'm not mistaken. And it's really too bad. He probably would have been a pretty good candidate. As a former mayor, he certainly would have had the contacts and the access to the organization and all that they would have needed to run. And I really, in looking back now, don't even know why he did all of this, do you?
No, it just seemed kind of strange. It was a disjointed campaign. He had had some baggage down there. I think talked to some folks in Macon. He was divisive at times, during his time tenure down there. But, obviously, Jim Marshall has made some doubters, we'll say, on the left to him. And then there, in that race is still Robert Nowak, or Novak. And Mr. Novak, I don't know if that leaves him all the disenchanted voters or what that'll mean for the primary. But it definitely would have to seem like a plus for Jim Marshall.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's probably a plus for Robert Novak, too.
Yes, because I guess he could coalesce any anti-vote, but it would have been a strange situation in there. I don't know whether the combination of Ellis and Novak combined could have forced Jim Marshall into a runoff, which then would probably the biggest beneficiary of that would have been his Republican opponent.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, for that, so there is some, the Republicans certainly were kind of probably disappointed that Jack Ellis dropped out, because that now changes their dynamic a little bit with no hopes of a runoff, making a Democratic incumbent seem weaker. But then there's some of the state house races. There's been more movement there. We apparently now have challengers in both Mike Jacobs' seat and Jill Chambers' seat, which are Republican seats in DeKalb County, which is a strong Democratic county. One of our former guests on the show, Chris Huttman, is going to run against Jill Chambers, and Keith Gross, who's been in the race a little longer, a little while now, has actually, I guess, started making more public moves in his run against Mike Jacobs, and that being a party switcher is probably a prime target for Democrats. Catherine, your thoughts on that?
Well, I think there's actually another, we may find out between now and qualifying, I think there's actually another person running in that seat, too, a woman who is a little bit older and maybe a little bit more experienced than what's his name?
Is this Mike Jacobs seat?
Yeah, Mike
or
Jacobs
Bill
seat.
Chambers seat.
Yeah,
okay.
Mike Jacobs seat. But I think whoever runs in that seat has a good shot at it. I think there's a lot of people who will help whoever is running against Mike Jacobs. I certainly will.
I would think that would be the case.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of support for someone, for whomever ends up running against him, because there's a lot of anger about that whole switching, even though it was kind of expected at some point. But as far as Chris Huttman running against Jill Chalmers, I think that's great. Good for him.
Yes, I mean, that seat. And Chris is the kind of guy, he knows numbers of districts and trends about as well as anybody in the state. I mean, somebody mentions a race, and he talks about the, you know, he can talk about the VAP and how the VAP, the voting age population's changed, and very technical. So I'm sure he can see this as a seat that has some trends that are going to favor Democrats, because that's just how, you know, that's the knowledge base he has.
Yeah, and he should have some pretty strong help behind him, too, as well. So, because he's been, you know, supportive of the party and worked for the party for a long time. So I think he should have some good support. And he's lived in the district, so he should have that. That should be a pretty interesting race to watch.
Yeah,
I'm sure that Jill Chambers has plenty of money, but Chris will just have to get some money, I guess.
Well, incumbents always do. I mean,
exactly.
It's rare that you're going to be able to outspend an incumbent. Just by the nature of the fundraising and how, you know, political action committees and others can donate.
But it's nice to make the Republicans spend some money. You know,
yes,
if no one was running against her, then she could use that money to support someone else. So I'm always happy when someone steps up to run, because it means they can't, you know, they have to spend that money.
Well, this is the kind of race, if we're gonna pick up seats in a cycle, you're going to have to pick up these kind of seats.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't know what the exact. I've yet to see the list of the top targets, but I would have to think these would make the top 25 for sure. Probably the top 10. You can only think of a few more seats that are like, oh yeah, they're right there with them. I think the seat George Wilson's going to run against against Munford, and there may be more people in that race. That's going to be one of those seats. The district I live in, with the city of Rome in it, you would think that would have to be a pretty high sense. Dr. Puckett, the education assistant superintendent up here, did real well. And speaking of this area, there's three, I've heard of three candidates looking at races up in this area uncontested. None of this is completely confirmed yet, so I don't want to say any names yet. But I get the sense that statewide, while it looked like recruiting was going kind of slow, recruiting's starting to fall into place a little better in some areas. Tim, what's your sense?
Well, my sense is from the perspective of my own county. There are Democrats coming out of the woodwork to run in all of these races up here. I know this county isn't indicative of even the other counties around it. So far, we have heard of no Republicans who have announced that they are running for anything, which I find pretty shocking, especially considering the fact that every office up here is held by a Democrat. Now, down there in your county, I really believe Preston Smith is going to draw some strong opposition.
Yes,
I believe if you're talking about possible targets down there, obviously Katie Dempsey is target number one, but Preston's got to be target number two, don't you think?
Well, as far as electability, I think if you had one candidate and you had one pool of money you wanted to put into a district, you'd have to put it into, and the number escapes me, I believe it may be the 12th district now, the City of Rome seat that does not go outside of Floyd County, that Bob Puckett lost by, what was it? It was in just a few hundred. It really was.
It was just a little handful of votes.
It was really very close. And so that's the seat you'd have to go after. You know, Jerry Wood was a guy that had been elected countywide and still, you know, got beat pretty handily by Preston Smith. I don't think it was Jerry Wood's fault. I think it was the electorate is just, at that point in time, was just not ready for a Democrat. And how much more ready? I think it's more ready, but is it ready enough? I definitely put the better candidate in the House.
But if I'm a candidate, David, who is mulling either running against Barry Loudermilk or running against Preston Smith, don't you agree that Preston would be the more attractive target?
Oh, if you just wanted to, throw bombs and embarrass, somebody for a hypocritical political life, obviously Preston's the choice. There's no doubt about it. I mean, he's rumored around, but
Preston's district would be a little more friendly to a Democratic candidate than would Representative Loudermilk's district.
Oh yes,
would it
Loudermilk.
Not?
Oh yes, I thought you were speaking about the other seat. Yes.
No.
Much better than Loudermilk's. That's definitely sure because of the places that it touches. But that's the kind of thing we're having people look at, even those districts like Barry Loudermilk's, which is very Republican.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard Austin Scott, one of the I believe he was the only Republican to vote for changing the flag, which took some political courage. He doesn't Tifton. He's actually drawn opposition by, and this person's not running because of the flag vote at all. He's running. He's a good teacher, a GAU member down there that came pretty close. I believe John Tibbetts, he's running in Tifton. So more folks are coming out of the woodwork because, I tell you, just in the past while I've been, kind of pretty down on how recruiting had been going at the state house and the state senate level, and while I still think there's some more work to do, I'm a little more hopeful than I was at first.
Well, if you want to run, I mean, this is the year to run. With all these Democrats coming out to vote in the primaries and all the activity that's going on around the presidential races, you'd think that if you were ever going to think about running, this would probably be the year.
Yes.
If you're a Democrat.
That would be the case. It's about the time that our guest is going to call in, so I'm just going to keep a watch out for him. But I tell you something that we haven't talked about as much, but I guess it gets talked about so much in the national media, and that's the presidential race, but it seems like a good time to look back at it. It's kind of gone on a little bit of a vacation, and even some of the candidates going on vacation. Tim, what are some of your thoughts on the presidential race at this point?
Well, first of all, I believe I've discovered that Senator Obama can take a punch even when it's administered right to his jaw, and that's what the deal with Reverend Wright did to him. If he was ever going to go down, I believe that might have been the time for it. But he seems to have recovered nicely, at least in the national polling. He's ahead now by 132 total delegates, and I'm reading this off of Real Clear Politics, and 166 pledged. He's over 700,000 ahead in the popular vote. He's won two-thirds of the state. Now, on her side of things, the thing with her is that she's won big states that the Democrats need in November. I know there have been some this week that have called for her to step aside. I do not believe that's going to happen anytime soon. The race goes on about where it was.
And I don't think she should step aside in that. As long as you're winning, you've got some traction. When a campaign completely falls apart and all someone can do is just destruction politics, that's when somebody should step aside. But, I mean, she's ahead by double digits in Pennsylvania. She could then roll that into a West Virginia, an Indiana win. A string of wins. And then, there's still time. If at that point, then see if they're going to still come up with anything for Michigan and Florida. Now, the point where she starts losing places she should win, that changes the dynamics. Catherine?
I just think it's really a shame that we're, encouraging her to quit when we as a, as a party or whoever, because this is the first time at least that I can recall when everybody's going to have a chance to vote. And let's just let everybody vote. Let's just, cool out, calm down, quit with the superdelegate, talk, and just let everybody vote. Like you said, David, if it gets, if she were to lose Pennsylvania or start losing really badly, then, then it would be a choice that she would be able to make. But, I think it's great that everybody's going to get a chance to vote. I don't know if anybody saw Howard Dean on TV this week. He was on all the news shows on Friday. And that's basically what he was saying. And even on Bill Maher on Friday night. Now, Bill Maher has been critical of Hillary Clinton from the get-go. But he, you know, he said, everybody just settle down. Let's just let everybody vote. I think we should just let everybody vote. It's a great, we have two great candidates. Let's just see how it all falls at the end of it all.
I know exactly what you're saying. I mean, you know, we teach, you know, kids and any kind of athletics or anything, you know, or anything, don't quit. You know, finish what you start. Well, this thing's not finished, and I think if you look back to 92, how long was it before Jerry Brown dropped out? I mean, wasn't it May at that point?
I don't remember.
I mean, but it was a good long time.
Yeah, and well, I mean, it's great for these late states. I mean, you remember how we used to feel, because when we voted later, it was like, well, what's the point, you know? It's already been decided. So I think it's exciting for those people who are in these later states to be able to really, you know, be a part of the process. And I think it's unfortunate that we're always talking about these strategies and about this instead of talking about what distinguishes these candidates from each other and what is it about them that you like or dislike, and what are the policies that you're supporting. I'm just tired of all this conversation about strategy and polling, and let's talk about the issues.
Yes, and they say,
Okay, I'm going to jump in right there and say this, and I've got to chastise both camps for this. Lately, they've been talking about anything but issues.
Exactly.
They've gotten out the chainsaws, and they're going at each other, and that helps nobody but John McCain.
You're absolutely right.
You can tell the polling. I mean, there's no doubt that in the polling so far that's what you're seeing is he's actually the beneficiary of you know, what's going on here. But is that short-lived, or is that going to continue on? I mean, my thinking is, if this is going to make us a little stronger, I mean, what if this thing with Wright would have come out in October?
It killed him.
Well, it'll come back out in October.
But I mean, it won't come out the same way. I mean, it's kind of like if, you know, you see the surprise party and the surprise is wrong, and then the next time they try to do it right, it's just there's no surprise factor the second time. I mean, there'll be pockets of people that use, you know, that talk about it over and over. They'll be able to talk about a lot of things, but once something's been put out there, you just can't throw that punch again the same way.
That's true.
But I would love to see this thing settled long before the convention, as would all of us.
Yeah, Dean seems to think it's going to be resolved by July 1st.
Well, I just think July 1st, certainly, because all the delegates, all the states will have voted, and so we'll know about all the pledged, elected delegates by then, and then that would help clear things up. I will say this. I do think at this point, I mean, it's still this way. You have a lot of female voters, particularly older female voters, say 60 and up, that, I mean, they're going to be heartbroken if Hillary Clinton doesn't get on the ticket because, you know, this is their chance to see a female on the ticket. You're going to have a lot of black voters that if Obama does not get on the ticket, they're going to be heartbroken. Maybe in some ways that you would think because he's younger, less so, but you just see that they sense that now's the time. I almost think that either way, this is going to have to be a joint ticket or somebody's
really
going to get their feelings hurt.
They're going to have to ask.
And I don't mean the candidates getting there. I don't mean Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama
getting
their feelings hurt. I'm talking about regular Americans will get there, you know. It'll be a big disappointment.
I think that the best thing that will happen if they don't pick each other for running mates is for them to work together after the convention. And I'm sure they will. I mean, look what happened in 2004 with, Howard Dean and Dick Gephardt. All of them were out there working for Kerry. And I think I certainly hope we can count on them, because with the number of Democrats that have been coming out to vote this year, we can't let them down. We have to make sure that they feel whether their choice was ultimately prevailed or not, that their voice is being heard. And so I think that we have to put pressure on whomever doesn't get the nomination to really support the candidate that does.
Yes, and I do think some of the rhetoric has been strong, but really strong, overly strong when you see some things have been happening. But one I was surprised with, and I guess it may have happened before last week's show, was Bill Richardson endorsing Senator Obama, and then James Carville's response, calling him Judas.
Oh,
I don't know what kind of promises were made, but it was just, it was such strong language.
Carville is like so 1992, 96. I can't stand that guy anymore. I just can't stand him.
I do think he's intriguing. I think he's tough. I think if Kerry's people would have listened to him a little earlier, they would have been better off, because he is somebody. I don't know if he can take a punch, but I know he knows how to throw one, using one of Tim's references earlier. So I do think there's something to be learned from him. But then I was surprised at how strong that language was, and it just surprised me. It's kind of, because I've always thought, you know, Bill Richardson's a really good fit for Hillary Clinton, if she were to win the nomination, if it wasn't the case, like I think it's become, that either way it's got to be. I think it needs to be a joint ticket. But if, I didn't see him as good of a fit for Barack Obama, if he were the nominee. I don't know if anybody shares those thoughts.
I share Mario Cuomo's thoughts, and I'm sure you heard him and read him.
What did he say?
Well, the first thing is, whoever wins this nomination is going to have to turn around for the sake of unity and offer the vice presidential slot to the second place finisher, especially this year because of the unique circumstances and because of how even this race has been, don't you think?
Oh, I think that is the year that this happens. Yes. Well, I will apologize if anybody from South Carolina is listening in to hope to talk about, you know, South Carolina politics, and we could do our best stab at it. We know that Lindsey Graham is up for his first reelection, and, you know, they say in Senate circles that if you get by your first reelection, then you have a much easier time, but we don't have Mr. Brack yet on the phone to talk to us about those kind of things, but we apologize for that, but we'll try to mix in what we can as we can. But I guess looking back at the week in politics, we do have some candidates coming forth. We also have the Ron Saylor investigation continues to go on. This week we learned that there may be more people implicated. And also, speaking of candidate recruitment, we learned that Willie Green, former football player, that was looking to run for Congress and payday lender, gave him a loan of, was it over $100,000? Who knows the exact dollar figure?
I thought it was $90,000.
Close to $100,000.
It
was a large amount. And this was a loan to him, not related to the church loan that was $250,000, that he had all these loans outstanding, and that he based his payday lending vote on those changes. And then I even heard something more disturbing, that Willie Green was being looked at as a possible recruitment candidate to run for the seat that Jane Kidd came so close to there in Athens. But it also includes Walton County. Y'all's thoughts on anything related to the Saylor mess?
Well, I just checked. It was $80,000.
It was $80,000.
And I just hope it's Republicans and not Democrats that he was reporting.
And unfortunately, the early rumors are that it may be more Democrats, and I think somebody may have written a blog post or an article somewhere that I saw that, you know, this is such a year for Democrats to make gains in, and things like this Saylor thing will just be shooting ourselves in the foot, because then if there's corruption that people don't like, just like with Mark Foley and some of the other characters in the United States House, they can point, in Georgia, they can point to Democrats, because they can say, oh, look at their attendance record. All but one was a Democrat.
At
Saylor. Look at the people involved with Saylor. And I also heard one of our Senate candidates, Vernon Jones, that his land was used as collateral on some type of loan, and Jeff Dickerson on the Georgia gang, one of his paid PR people, said, oh, that Vernon Jones had nothing known about that. Well, it seems like that would be some kind of fraud charge if he was putting up people's land as collateral without them knowing about it. Tim, any thoughts on this mess?
Oh, geez. Where do I even start here? This Vernon Jones thing, oh, of course he knew. How could he not know that his own farm was being put up for collateral for a loan? I mean, perhaps if he's listening, Vernon Jones would love to call us and fill us in, but let me put it this way, what does Vernon Jones think that people are going to believe? When they hear
this. If he didn't know, then, you know, how lame is that, that he's not keeping track of, you know. And if he did know, how lame is that? I mean, either way, it doesn't look good for old Vernon.
Yeah. Well, it seems like it would be a call. I mean, they would be like, if, hey, so-and-so put your house up as collateral for their loan. It seems like, I mean, I would think you'd have to co-sign documents. I mean, that's...
You do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a real estate lawyer, but it just makes common sense that there's some type of documented notification process.
You're right about that, David, as far as I know. I mean, I'm not a lawyer either, but, you know.
Maybe this is one of these payday lending things, and that just scares me. You know, somebody could get your name out of the phone book and go to Easy Max or whatever, Title Max.
DiTech.
Yeah. I mean, it's just absurd, though, but, I mean, and I wonder how many voters are attuned to this whole situation with, you know, Vernon Jones people coming out there claiming that he doesn't know about this Ron Saylor thing. And then there was something that the AJC reported with him and Bishop Polk, which Bishop Polk's been in all kind of trouble. The trouble started so long ago, you don't really hear the name as much anymore, but it was an AJC. Tim or Catherine, any comments on that part of the whole thing?
Oh, I didn't know about that part.
Well,
it's an AJC political insider.
Jones was deposed in a lawsuit involving Bishop Polk, isn't that correct?
Yes.
Late last year. So he is obviously involved in this at some level as well. See, it's all these little things just keep adding up. And believe me, if someone gets the Democratic nomination and all of these things are out there, I guarantee you the Republicans will be glad to let the voters of Georgia know all
about it. Exactly. Nothing would be a better way to spend their money.
Well, really, I think it may even be so bad if Vernon Jones were to, you know, be the nominee with all the stuff circling around him. The Republicans, Saxby Chambliss might actually just be like, oh, what a blessing for me. I ran this slash and burn, awful campaign against Max Cleland. Even if I somehow have a 51% approval rating or whatever it may be, people are still going to think of me as a guy that was pretty dirty tactics on Max Cleland, a war hero. This would be a chance for him to have such a weak opponent. He might not ever have to do a negative ad and then try to say, hey, the last time I ran such a clean campaign.
Yep.
And try to rebuild his image.
Old Saxby could be the regular statesman.
Is what?
I said old Saxby could be the regular statesman in this thing, couldn't he?
Well, we've seen campaigns like that. I mean, really, I mean, like the lieutenant governor's race last time, Casey Cagle really didn't run a lot of negative ads. I guess he saw the polling just in general on the ticket was not that close, and therefore he, you know, stayed, you know, ran nothing but positive ads. Even Purdue, I'm sure there were some negative ads ran against Taylor.
Yeah, there were.
I'm not sure, but it wasn't as many. I bet they left a lot in the can just because, you know, they looked at the polling. Just like in 2002, Roy Barnes didn't run near as much negative stuff against Purdue just because the polling never showed that it was that close a race.
Yeah,
well, there you go. Another example of how polling isn't always accurate.
No, it's not. But, I mean, it's just it's kind of like you coach a little different when you see what the score is on the scoreboard. I mean, you use it to an extent just because you don't have anything else to use sometimes. I mean, or it affects the nature of a race. But, yeah.
Vernon Jones, though, needs to think about something here. He is one of the favorites in this race. Now, if he's involved in some of this stuff, he needs to clean his act up a little bit if he wants to be the party nominee and actually have a chance of winning in November, like he told us when he was on our show earlier.
Well, and here's the thing I think you got to think about, is it's going to be qualifying. We're having a lot of people we didn't expect to look at races and, you know, come out of the woodwork. Is it possible qualifying happens and some people don't run based on, say, some of the sailor controversy, other things, because it's a way to lower their profile and not have as many things happen? And given that, you know, Vernon Jones has been mentioned in two sticky situations just in the last little bit, I mean, that don't even include the other sticky stuff we've heard about, does he decide not to do this if his chances aren't as good?
No. I don't think so.
I think he's in, David.
He may be. He may. But I'm just saying, and if he didn't, it might be the most interesting thing to happen in that race, in that then the field, if he looks like he's going to run the whole time, then decides not to run, the field would have no black candidate, and then you'd have, you know, 30 to 40% of the Democratic primary electorate, which actually I don't think this is Denise Majette. I don't think this is Barack Obama. I don't think Vernon Jones coalesces the black vote the same way those candidates did, because those were far superior, people with far superior integrity.
Agreed.
And so I do think that, to be fair, it's not like this is going to be politics all the way.
I might also remind Mr. Jones of a couple of other things. The most recent polling has Cardwell leading overall, not him. Secondly, Martin has gotten in this race. Now he has very good relations with the black community. He could make some real inroads there, especially over stuff like this.
Well, and Del Cardwell, at his announcement, the DeKalb police chief actually endorsed Del Cardwell there. His name escapes me, but, you know, so that's some, you know, that's other inroads there. So it's going to be a more interesting race.
Well, you know, David, we've been thinking that, yes, there's going to be a runoff, and correctly, but we've always thought of it in terms of Vernon Jones being in the runoff. I'm not so sure about that. Why not Dale Cardwell and Jim Martin?
It's, you know, very possible. I mean, those two candidates, those three candidates have the highest name ID. You know, one's been, on the statewide ballot. One, given that he's in charge of one of the top three population counties, and the other's been on the Channel 2 News for a while. And I guess in talking about, you know, U.S. Senate race controversies, we noticed that there was something, a YouTube video that came up with Jim Martin, and then people speculated that it came up because, you know, that Del Cardwell was the reporter, even though it happened in 2003, that he's had something to do with it, yet the guy from the New Grady Coalition said, oh, no, it was totally me. Catherine, any thoughts on that?
I'm sorry, I was distracted.
Tim, any thoughts on that?
I did go and look at the video. Of course, it was Dale Cardwell doing the investigative report. This involved when Martin was a commissioner and computers at his department were not functioning properly, and some people on Medicaid and some other services were not getting those services as a result of the computers, and it was speculated that those computers were not fixed because of budget cuts, and that Martin might have been doing this, putting off fixing them to help Governor Perdue with his budget. Is that about the size of it, David?
That's what I've heard. And then, of course, then the videos, how did they get out there, which is my understanding. You know, Del Cardwell can't use anything from WSB, from the property,
I believe you have a caller, David.
It looks like we do. Before we go to the caller, Catherine, any more thoughts on this so far? Or
well, you know, I don't like that kind of stuff. I don't like, you know, tell me why I should vote for Dale Cardwell. Don't tell me why I shouldn't vote for Jim Martin.
But that's what I'm saying, that apparently people have tried to say, oh, Dale Cardwell was responsible for this. But then we found out that it doesn't look like he is. I mean, unless he's clairvoyant, can predict who to investigate in 2003, because since 5 years down the road, he's going to have a career change, and he's going to pick his opponent that's going to be this guy that has this statewide job. I mean, it's kind
of... Well, I'm not saying that that Dale Cardwell did it, but whomever is doing it is trying to convince us not to vote for Jim Martin. You know, the idea is that don't vote for Jim Martin, vote for Dale Cardwell. Well, I don't like that kind of politics. I want to know why you think I should vote for Jim Martin or why I should vote for Dale Cardwell, not why I shouldn't vote. I'm not good on the, you know, negative. I just don't respond to that negative stuff. Like, tell me what's good about the candidate you like, not what's bad about the one that they're opposing.
Yes. And Tim's right. We do have a caller, but it's not from a South Carolina area code, so I don't think it's Andy Brack. Welcome, caller.
Hi, David. It's Dale Cardwell.
Dale Cardwell.
Well, what brings you to the show?
Actually, I was going to call to talk about the Jim Martin entry into the race as well as Vernon Jones. And I've been listening with fascination for the last couple of minutes where the conversation turned. Mr. Marshall is the guy who posted the spot. And actually, he called me and asked me to talk with him about the background of why I did the story and so forth. But frankly, let me talk for the reason that I called in. I think you guys ought to pay very close attention to the timing and the surrounding of Jim Martin's announcement. I have many, many friends in investigative circles, and it's what I did for years and years. I think that there's a connection between Jim Martin's entry into the race and the possibility that Vernon Jones won't be in the race in July. I say that because if you take a look at Jim's website, if you take a look at his announcement, which did not include a public announcement, it was an email. And I've talked to a lot of people. It's not really the rollout that you would expect from a seasoned statewide candidate, especially just a few days before the reporting period closes. I suspect that there was a lot of effort to get Jim Martin into the race at a very late hour simply because some buzz got around that Vernon Jones was not going to be on the ballot in July. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. I think you're seeing a very reluctant candidate getting into the race, a person who really doesn't want to run. But he's doing it because perhaps all of a sudden a few people saw an opening for a person who's run a credible statewide race before to get into the race. And I challenge you to pay close attention to that.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
It is. We're actually discussing the idea that, you know, because of the Saylor investigation, not all the candidates may make the race. So that came up. Is a possibility. Also, I believe you attended an event last night that had like 300 Democrats in Northeast Georgia. Tell us about that event then.
It was actually great. Tim, I told people it's like going home to your family Christmas event, and you walk in and it's all your uncles and aunts and your cousins, and you just feel like you're at home. You just walk into a group of people. You know, the only difference is back in the 60s when I was a kid, the room would have been filled with smoke. but, you know, it was a warm, warm event, and it was just wonderful, and the place was packed. And you could just feel the energy and feel the excitement. You know, I'm telling you, I really feel good about this election, and not just for me. I feel good for Democrats. I just think that there's going to be a sea change this time. I think we saw something significant with Ralph Reed's defeat. I think it was the peak of hate politics, and I think that Georgia turned its back on hate politics, and I think we're going to see an amazing sea change in November, and it's going to be regular, everyday people saying, look, I just want an opportunity. I want a shot at life. I want to be treated fairly, and I do care about my brother and my sister. I think that's what George is about, and the room was full of that last night. It was just a wonderful event.
That's good to hear about. You know, that was the 10th district or 9th district?
The 9th district.
9th district.
We were up in Blue Ridge.
Blue Ridge. So, yes, because they changed the numbers recently, and that kind of threw me for a curve. I knew all my numbers until the Republicans redistricted just a few years ago and changed the 7th to the 11th. Well, actually, they had done that already, but there were some other, the 3 and the 8 switched and a few other things. Yes, well, Dale, thanks for calling in and kind of clearing up some of that about the video, because we know that, one point it was reported one way in the AJC. Then the AJC did come back and say, hey, the Ron Marshall stepped forward and said he's the one responsible for the video, and from there.
Well, I'll say this, and just to mention something that Catherine touched on, and I don't want to get into this because it's just not important to me right now, but I think it's comparative politics. I'm not the guy who put that out there, but at some point in the race you get into comparative politics. And you get into, does a person do what they say they do, and are they going to stand for what they say they stand for? And I think that becomes important, but it's not important right now.
Yeah. Well, thanks for calling in and clearing some of that up.
You bet. Thank you, guys. Nice talking with you.
Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like we do have a listener base that listens, and I know Dale's told me he listens. I've had other candidates and office holders say, hey, I heard what y'all were saying the other day on the show. A lot of podcasts, some listen live, so it's good to get callers in. And if people do listen live and want to jump in, we welcome you to call on in.
I was talking to a friend the other night, Friday night, who said that he really enjoys the show. I didn't know he listened to it, but he just said, I really enjoy it. I think it's really good. So
yeah, you find more and more people, and almost I must think that some of these people must get together in groups of 5 and listen. Because it seems like that our listener base numbers should actually be higher than they are based on when I go to an event like the JJ Dinner or something and people talk about it. But I once again, for listeners and maybe tune in to hear Andy Brack, don't know what's happened. I did send him an email earlier on the show with the number reminding, and something may have come up. I know how that is, and we get stood up less and less. But in the hope of this isn't a stand up situation. Also, Tim on the switchboard, I don't know if you're seeing it too, but you've had your hand raised with a little red arrow on it. I don't know if that's some signal.
I have no idea what that is. I've been looking at it. Maybe it being you're seeing it, it doesn't indicate that it's just on my computer.
No, I was just sitting there going, what does that mean? I tried to click on it to see what it meant. Like if you're saying, call on me, or like, what is
well,
it?
Don't click on it. You may launch nuclear missiles or something.
Well, I won't do that. But
let's get back to something for a minute, because I've been sitting here in absolute shock since Dale Cardwell came on, and he immediately touched on something that we were just talking about in passing a few minutes ago. Did I hear him correctly saying that there perhaps is a very real possibility that Vernon Jones may not even choose to qualify?
Well, that's been a rumor I've heard other places, and that is what he said. Because, the rumor at first was Vernon Jones may choose to qualify against Hank Johnson. He might have built up the same idea in the state race. I don't think that's going to happen unless it comes out as a curveball out of left field. Although I will say this, I kind of would have relished that race because I'd like to have seen Hank Johnson beat him right there in DeKalb. Because I think, once again, Hank Johnson's an individual that I see has more integrity. That's just the sense I get out of it.
I think that if anybody in Vernon Jones's campaign is listening, if they would email David or me or something, or Catherine or something, and let us know what's going on there. I believe a whole lot of Democrats and a whole lot of other Senate candidates would really love to know where this thing stands.
Yes, I mean, I think that would be, I mean, we can have candidates on more than once, and we could extend that invitation again. Although, given that we've kind of told some of our feelings about the race,
well, I think
they might
that,
not be
you know,
as eager to come on.
I think the reason that's why we have qualifying in April, you know, they don't really have to, as much as we'd like them all to tell us what their plans are, they really don't have to until qualifying. And
yeah, but this man has a high-profile campaign up and running. He's made an official announcement. There's a lot of people ready to work and vote for him. He is one of the favorites in this race.
Oh, I agree with you 100%, Tim. I think we should know what his plans are. I think it would be the, you know, better part of valor, as they say. But it would not surprise me if he left those things dangling until qualifying, just because he's going to wait and see, you know, how the wind's blowing and what happens with this Ron Saylor, if any of these recordings get released and if he's implicated and how this whole loan thing pans out, you know. I mean,
well, the thing with Ron Saylor, though, is you have to go, hey, I mean, you have to say, hey, did I do anything shady with Ron Saylor? And if the answer is no, then you move ahead like you would. If the answer is yes, then I would think, given that they're rumoring a double-digit number of individuals are going to be implicated, political figures, then you have to say, I don't know about this. I think it was speculated on the Georgia gang that the CAB CEO's race may be involved in that. Stan Watson and Vernon Jones are allies, and Stan Watson was going to run for that. But now Vernon Jones' chief of staff, Kimbrough, her first name escapes me, that she's looking to run. So I don't know how this fits into the whole puzzle, but it certainly, you know, brings some more things in, like maybe one person could get implicated out of that, not the other, and there'd still be a Jones legacy candidate in the race. I've just heard that thrown out there. Speaking of metro politics, one thing I think we do have to cover before the show time gets away from us is in Clayton County, Sheriff Victor Hill. I don't know if y'all both read it, but Sheriff Hill has closed down the jail. He's just not going to let anybody in the jail. Well, most people are saying, "Hey, it's okay. You can't just let everybody in the jail. Bad things will happen if you let everybody in the jail." But no, Victor Hill didn't want the police of Clayton County to come in the jail. That would include doing investigations and question witnesses and question suspects. Catherine or Tim, any thoughts on Victor Hill?
Oh, you know, what is it about Clayton County with their school board and Victor Hill? And it's just...
But some people say politics don't affect their life, Catherine. They don't matter. You just put anybody in there, and then you expect everything to be okay.
What has this guy done so far? He's fired 24 deputies. He was fined by the State Ethics Commission for campaign violations. Now this thing with the cops. And the reason he's doing that is he's making a power grab. He would very much like to eliminate the county police department and transfer everything up under him. He's even told people this. I mean,
but can you even do that? Is there a county in Georgia, and I mean, I can even say that functions that way? Even little counties in Georgia, is there places where the police and the jail are under one roof completely? I mean,
you mean other under the auspices of one person like
that? Yeah, like the sheriff runs the police.
Not to my knowledge, no.
No, I mean,
it was in Mayberry.
So he's watching Andy Griffith rerun.
In the meantime, what Catherine said is what people are saying. What is it about Clayton County?
You can't say it's the water, because pretty recently they actually were rated as the best tasting water in Georgia. That actually, the two counties that won that distinction were Clayton and Floyd, and that's the only two places I've ever lived, so I must like good water. But I don't know. There's been a lot of changes in Clayton County, but still, I mean, there are electing some good folks down there. I mean, I think Eldrin Bell's a qualified official. And speaking of the school board, while in whole they've got too many nuts to outweigh the good, I mean, they've got a guy like Eddie White, who was an educator, a good guy. And as Eddie White said, hey, if it means – the kids being able to be accredited and do what they need to do. I'll resign this week, he said that, but this is a guy that's, he's part of the solution, not part of the problem.
Yeah. Well, I have a friend who teaches there.
Yeah.
He teaches elementary school, and I've been, you know, kind of talking to her about it, like, what do you think? She says, well, I think we'll resolve it. She said, I signed my contract for next year because our kids, the kids need consistency and continuity, and so I'm going to be there whether we're accredited or not, you know.
Well, and it's, and I will say this, as far as a teacher, that's not as big a risk as if a child or a parent, because as long as they're cutting the checks, you're still getting, you know, you're not hurting your pay. But then, of course, if you're a junior right now, those are the kids in the most risk. I mean,
oh,
if you're
yeah.
a second grader and you're happy with what was going on in that elementary school, not a problem. It's just keep people about to graduate and about to get hope and trying to get into certain colleges.
Yeah.
It'll affect. And seniors it won't affect. Well, I guess we're in that final 10 minutes of the show. Tim, go ahead and give us the outrage of the week.
Okay, David. Normally, at least to me, the Republican outrage of the week is generally given to us by an actual Republican. Makes perfect sense, right? Not so fast, folks. This week is different. This week is really different. Or maybe it isn't. Let's look. This morning, Senator Joe Lieberman was making the rounds of the Sunday morning talk shows. Remember him? Vice presidential candidate in 2000, presidential candidate in 2004, the guy who said in July of 2006 that he would work to get a Democrat elected president this year. Does all of that ring a bell? Well, had you seen him this morning, he would have borne no resemblance to that guy I just mentioned. There he was, former Democrat and now independent Senator Lieberman, campaigning on behalf of John McCain, and the whole thing was just sickening. He said that the Democratic Party no longer resembled the Democratic Party he first became involved in during the time of John Kennedy. Well, first of all, that's a lie. Without a doubt, I assert that it not only strongly resembles it, but I guarantee you all that John Kennedy would have laughed in Lieberman's face had he been there today. And secondly, why do these guys, like Lieberman, always bring up John Kennedy's name? Why don't they brag on Hoover or Nixon instead? Heck, why not brag on Reagan? Lieberman's new Republican friends would have loved that one. The very next thing that Lieberman indicated was that he didn't really leave the Democratic Party, that it had left him instead. Now, why did I know that such a predictable load of horse feathers was coming even before he said it? What is it about guys like Lieberman and Zell Miller that make them say this instead of the truth? And the truth is the Democratic Party is right where it has been, core issues and all. They just walked away from it and join the Republican Party. They are not Democrats anymore. Heck, guys, just say it. Give reasons, not excuses. He actually had the audacity to say that John McCain was closer in policy beliefs to John Kennedy, Al Gore, and Bill Clinton than were the two current Democratic candidates. Yeah, he really did say that. Either he is so blinded by his own rhetoric that he won't say otherwise, or he's been dipping in the cooking sherry. But there is just no way that any rational political person of any stripe could take that one seriously. Here's the truth. Joe Lieberman has switched parties. That's fine. Let him say it. Furthermore, when the new Congress, with its enlarged Democratic majorities, convenes next January, let him show it. Somebody please tell him to caucus with the Republicans. I have simple needs. I'm a Democrat. I don't want Republicans in my party. I now consider Joe Lieberman to be a Republican. So actually, in retrospect, I guess this was the GOP outrage of the week after all. Wolf was just still wearing sheep's clothing, David.
Another great one, and what an easy target he's become. I was pretty lukewarm on him when Gore put him on the ticket, but I find that comical that he would say, mention Bill Clinton and Al Gore, who can then immediately be asked about it and go, no.
Yeah,
that's not true.
Not to mention that Bill Clinton is actually out there campaigning for one of those two Democrats.
Yes, I mean that's absurd, and that's they can actually then say no, that's not the case, and make him look more foolish. And this is the guy that's I think this guy's in his last term because I mean he got beaten last time in the Democratic primary, isn't that correct, by Ned Lamont,
yeah.
And then
yeah.
Won as an independent. I just think
yeah.
The fervor is going to be so much stronger against him in a Connecticut that's just an increasingly blue state. I just don't see how this guy. You know, makes it out of there again. And that
well, especially if he does a lot of campaigning for McCain, because I think they'll be disgusted by that.
Yes, I just don't see. I mean, and he ran 2 years ago, that means he's got 4 more years. I mean, he has been up there a while, and maybe that's his plan. Maybe he called up Zell Miller and he sent him a copy of the playbook on how to do this.
Yeah.
That's what it's like. It just says, I do want to mention two things. Andy Brack actually called in during the outrage of the week. I couldn't take that call, but I am going to call him back, find out what went on, and hopefully we can line that up again next week because he does have a great amount of knowledge, even though something went awry on being on the show. And then also tomorrow, the 7th Congressional District of Georgia's Democratic candidate, is going to announce, and he has pledged to go ahead and come on our show next week, so he's going to be one of our featured guests as well. So people will be looking out to see his announcement and then know that he'll be on the show this coming Sunday. But until next week, another great Kudzu Vine.
Well, I have one thing, go ahead, Catherine. I just want to say real quick that if you have HBO, check out the John Adams miniseries. It's awesome. It's really a great lesson in the Founding Fathers, and it's very compelling. I've been watching it the last couple of weeks, and I highly recommend it. And
yeah.
Thanks for a great show tonight, guys.
Okay. See y'all then next week.
Okay.
Good night.
All right. Good night.
Blog Talk Radio.